All right, hello. Welcome to Danny Golden's podcast. I am recording my first ever podcast with Miss Heidi Bacani. How are you doing?
Hi, Danny. Hi, Danny.
This is our third time trying. The first time was a practice run
It's all
to
good.
test the software. The second time, my computer froze. So third time's lucky charm. But it also gave me an opportunity to change some of the questions up. And so thank you so much, Heidi, for your
Oh,
time, your resources,
my
and your
pleasure.
knowledge.
All my pleasure. Yeah.
So Heidi is a licensed marriage family therapist, and we feel very fortunate. Well, I feel very fortunate to have her on. It's just always, life is challenging enough as it is. So I felt like having a license access to someone with your knowledge, having a licensed family therapist on would be a great way for people to get access to information that they might not normally have access to. And resources, which is always helpful.
Yeah, I think it can be helpful for sure to talk about resources, to as many and reaching an audience as big is like really a good thing.
Yes, agreed. So the first question I'll ask is, how long have you been a licensed marriage family therapist?
I have been a licensed marriage family therapist for approximately 20 years. I graduated in 2005 with my master's in clinical psychology, and then I went on to work. While I was in grad school, I started my internship at Del Amo Hospital in Torrance, and I stayed there for 7 years in the intensive treatment unit. I collected all of my hours there towards my license. Oh, that's not true. I collected most of my hours there towards my license, but I also, as soon as I could start seeing people in private practice, I did that even prior to graduation, actually. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah, I've been in private practice a long time, even, under someone else's license. I've been in private practice for around 20 years as well, but simultaneously working for a hospital setting. I was also a social worker at a hospice company. I also worked for a private insurance company as a crisis clinician.
Oh, wow.
Also worked as a behaviorist for many, many group homes. One of the group homes I worked for was a 60-bed group home.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, lots of experiences.
Definitely. You definitely are not qualified. You have enough experience.
lots of experiences. Yeah, don't let the master's, level like fool you. Just because someone has a master's level doesn't mean that they don't have like this breadth of like knowledge and experience. So we can do a lot of things with a master's. And I think
Yeah, absolutely.
a lot of people search for the, doctor initials, after someone's name, but people with a master's degree are highly qualified to be providers as well. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that
That's a great segue. That's a great
a
segue. I just want to make sure I'm not frozen the whole
good
time.
segue
Yeah, I know. What made you want to be a licensed marriage and family therapist?
Oh, I love it when you ask me the question, Danny. So it started pretty early in life, this aspiration. And it wasn't, I wasn't like fully aware of this, what it would mean to want to be one, or that I really wanted to be one. I just remember sitting across from my therapist, in my 13-year-old brain, thinking, she's a really nice lady. I really feel safe with her. And I feel like I could tell her anything. I'm gonna cry and just like be my 13-year-old self. And she was so kind. And then from time to time, I would look around her office and I would notice little details like her furniture and her beautiful clothes and the beautiful photos she had of her and her family and the beautiful artwork. And I remember thinking, that looks so stable. And I think even as a little person, I thought, I just want stability in my life. That's all I want. And this
Yeah.
lady really presents that. So I think that's where the notion came about, that this could be a really good life and it could be work that I really want to do. And along the way I experienced how exciting and stimulating and satisfying, and I could still make a good living, to be able to afford my life. So it started in high school, and bit by bit, in different places I would volunteer at, this calling I had to help people just like got bigger and bigger. And this definitely supported, who I was as a person, this kind of work. So yeah, 13. 13. My mom was really smart. She had the wherewithal as a single mom working, 50 hours a week, to recognize that she couldn't give me everything I needed to have to learn to be a highly effective human being. So she was smart.
Yes.
To like we've joked about, it takes a village. Like, I think she was smart enough to identify, people that she could insert into my life and help me along the way.
Yes, it does
Yeah.
take a village. I think that I love that story. I think that's just so amazing. And you and I've talked about this. As many as much education as you can get in school, there aren't classes that teach you how to deal with navigating your emotions and navigating the difficult things that therapy really helps or has helped me do. And being a highly sensitive person, just as such as myself, I didn't know until one therapist was told me to read that book, and because I was like, I don't understand, why am I feeling this? Why am I feeling that? Is everyone, built like this? And as much as we're the same, we're also different, and we all have our own challenges. And to have a sounding board and someone who's an attentive listener, it's just and feel safe and get to that stability point. And for me, it was ultimately finding that serenity, that peace. It's just huge. It's priceless.
Priceless. Really helps with development, wherever we're stuck in our development.
Yes.
And everyone has stuff. Everyone has trauma. Everyone has, some hard, horrendous experience that they've been through, and that can impact us in so many ways, physically, emotionally, psychologically. And therapy is a place where we can unpack that and figure out, from where do we go, from that experience, and what do we do with what do you do with that experience? What do you do with those emotions that are like holding us back from whatever goals we have, whatever dreams we have, so.
Yeah, or just enjoying life.
Right. Oh yeah, that too. Yeah.
I always imagine, I had this visual when you were talking of, those rubber band balls where they tie they it's all just rubber bands one on top of another. I feel like that's how I was when I went into therapy at the beginning. And then it was like, first you take off one, then you take off, and then you finally look at the ball, the person, the center, and you're like, who am I? Where do I go from here? And I just think it's a beautiful process. It's painful, but beautiful.
It really does feel like it. That's a really good analogy, I think, or metaphor, that like the rubber band, each rubber band like coming off layer by layer. Yeah, that's a really, it's a very precise way of describing the process, I think.
Yeah, that's just how
Yeah.
I felt. I was like, what rubber band are we at? Are we at the ball yet? Or whatever's underneath, because I'm not even at the finish line, and I don't know, and I don't know that there is one, right? If you're not learning, you're not living, right? And if you're not growing, you know, my grandmother used to always say that. She would say, you know, if you're not learning, you're dead. So, and I feel, you know, whether you're learning about yourself or you're learning a subject in school, if you're not learning and you're not challenging yourself, you're not, in my opinion, living. And yeah. So, you know, but there are definitely times where it feels like you're running that multiple marathon and you're on the whatever mile and you're like, I'm going to crawl now. Okay, now I'm just going to stop. I'm just going to take a time out. So to your point about the village, you know, there are different people along that journey that are like, okay, come on, get up, Danny, or here's a glass of water. Like,
yeah,
it looks like you need a rest or, you know, don't worry. No one's going anywhere. It's
right.
Race is waiting for you to come back whenever you're ready.
Right. Or it's okay to sit here. I'll sit here with you until you're ready.
Yeah. That's a beautiful visual too. Yeah. We all need that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you need a timeout? Okay. I'll take that with you. You know? So how did you become a licensed marriage and family therapist? We had talked in offline, not for everyone to hear, about your experience working in hospice, social work. You briefly mentioned that initially and then the hospital. I just think that's so fascinating. So would you tell us a little bit about that?
Are you referring to like the process of how one becomes a licensed
person? Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I think we talked
Thank
about
you for clarifying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, no. I just want to make sure that's what you were looking for.
I'm going to follow your lead and have a sip of water too.
Hydrate. I'm always like,
I know, self-care.
Hydrate.
Yeah.
Yes. Self-care. Okay. So I mentioned earlier about getting my master's in clinical psych. What preceded that on my journey to becoming licensed was like the technical stuff that goes into it is bachelor's. But your bachelor's could be in anything. My bachelor's just, I happen to love psychology. So that's where, you know, where I decided to invest my money in. And, so bachelor's in psychology, bachelor of arts in psychology. And then the next academic step was a master's of arts in clinical psychology. But you can also get a master's of science in psychology. And then from there, before you graduate, you're required to complete, I believe it's 150 hours of therapy, talk therapy with someone licensed, obviously. And then also you're required to finish, I think it was 1200 hours of supervised work under someone's license before you graduate. So that's like a huge chunk of hours. And I remember all of us just hustling so hard to get those hours completed before graduation. And, you know, I was very fortunate to find the hospital that I wanted to work at, that I loved the population I worked with. You know, I worked in the intensive treatment unit where I was working with people in pretty high crisis, people that had gotten off their medication, needed to be back on it, were, you know, suicidal, self-harming, like the specific diagnoses that you would see very commonly were like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder. And it was the time in my life where I felt the most alive, like working on that unit. And I remember like as a trainee going in and telling my future supervisor, I'm not leaving this unit. Like I want to learn everything there is to know about these people and how to help them. And the protocol was like, you go on different units before you complete all your hours. But my intuition was telling me I need to just stay in here and learn as much as I could under the people that were working there. Because these were like, you could tell, I could tell right away that you're very well respected, and people that had been working on this unit for like over 10 years. So they knew their stuff, and it, something, you know, in me just said, stay here and learn as much as you can. And so that really served me later on in my private practice when I finally finished all my hours. I'll get back to like the technical stuff.
No, this is fascinating. I love it.
So all the knowledge I had gained while I was working on the intensive treatment unit at the Loma Hospital, that really served me in my private practice because I felt very equipped to work with anyone who like walked, through my door. And not to say that you don't get a lot of support, like even after you graduate and have all those hours, and but it's just a, it's it, for me it was like it was a bit of my own safety net, like just knowing that I had experience working with all these different, like disorders and personality disorders, mood disorders, thought disorders. So I was on that unit for 7 years. I would from time to time I would fill in for other social workers and therapists on other units. And I had the opportunity to work on a unit called the National Trauma Center was the name of the unit. And that unit in particular was for people that had more severe like self-harm behaviors, eating disorders, lots of body image issues, that kind of stuff. So that added, even more to like my experience of, working with people that were having like really big struggles around eating and substance, abuse issues too. So hospital is a really big part, really, really big part of like helping me grow as a therapist. So, and I said earlier, like from all simultaneously while I was in this hospital, I was doing all the other things too.
Wow.
I think it took 2,500 hours, 3,000 hours to complete the requirement for the license. It took me around, I think, 3.5 years, and that's considered like pretty accelerated because a lot of people can't get that many hours. Unless you're working in a hospital setting or insurance company, it's really hard to because you're working full time, in those settings. So like it's
Of course.
quicker, to rack up your hours. But if you're not, it's kind of grueling, like getting like the time it takes to finish. So finished my hours. I was in my private practice already, and then I got ready to take the license exam. There are two parts to the license exam, and that's probably the last piece of it is getting your license. And from there, I've continued to have continuing education courses, and then like I'm actually thinking, not thinking, I'm researching PhD programs right now to go into also.
Of course you
So
are.
finally. So, it's really dangerous to like step away from school and then like try to go back to it because it like in my situation it's taken me, 20 years to like get back, but I think I'm finally ready to tackle academia again, the writing of it, it's all writing, it's all, but I'm hungry. I feel like I've been starving myself like with knowledge, so academic knowledge. I love that. I love being in school. So I'm seeing it as like a gift, a gift that I'm giving myself now.
It feels like it when I listen to you. Like, I'm so happy. You know how emotional I get. I am so
Yeah.
happy for you. I just think it's so beautiful. And my favorite part about life, even though it doesn't always feel fun when it's you, but it's whenever I'm on the precipice of something extremely exciting, they're the same emotions, nervousness, fear, excitement, anxiety, and this kind of what the F have I just gotten myself into? But with those experiences, I do feel like you have the time of your, you have the time. I mean, I've had the time of my life. I can't speak for you, but you know, totally agree. So I'm excited for you because I feel like you're about to experience that again. And I can see your enthusiasm and your passion. And I just think it's so wonderful. And learning is fun.
Learning is so fun. Yeah. I definitely want to be a life learner. I think to piggyback on what you're just saying, like, but if you are, I know for me, like when I'm experiencing excitement and anxiety, that totally means I'm making the right choice. I'm, you know, making a good decision. So I'm going to like,
I know the feeling,
trust myself on that and keep moving, keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, no, I know the feeling. It's almost like at first you're ready to go and then I'll have moments where my heels are in the sand. Like I have this visual where my heels are in the sand and like the universe is pushing me and then it's like, no, you're going to do this. And I'm like, no, no, no. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Like but at first I'm like, get off my back. what are you doing? But no, I think that's wonderful. I think that's so exciting. I love
Thanks,
that.
Danny. Thank you for being so supportive. I appreciate
it. Of course. You're so supportive. Meg calls you, I don't know if you know your nickname. I'm sure you do, Mother Teresa. Oh, gosh. I concur.
Thank you.
All right, we will segue into the next part. What are the major differences between psychotherapy? Oh, unless you had anything else you wanted to add, I don't want to cut you off.
No, that was a long story, you know, just to say that you have to.
Oh, no, it was like, interesting.
Like, get your bachelor's, get your master's, finish your hours, get your therapy before you graduate, and then go forth and finish all these thousands of hours and then pass a test. That was the short
and then answer. You're still not done because you do continuing ed,
right?
Like a lawyer would, or you know, any profession. Okay, so the next question is for the listeners: what is the difference between a psychotherapist, a psychologist, and a psychiatrist?
Okay, so I mentioned before I'm a master's level therapist, and so a psychotherapist is a master's level therapist. And there are other varieties of master's level therapists. There's licensed clinical social workers. In California, there's licensed clinical social workers and licensed professional counselors. In the doctorate world, there's psychologists and people that have what's called a doctorate in clinical psychology.
Okay.
And those are the main difference is like those people have PhDs, we have, you know, and I have a master's, but we're trained identically in how to provide talk therapy. People that are in a PhD program do extra work to have a specialization in something oftentimes, or they are, you know, very interested in a particular topic and do ton of research on that topic and then write journals or you know, what's equivalent to like a book before they graduate, known as a dissertation. So those are like the major differences.
Okay, we'll go to how do you find a good therapist, or just how do you find a therapist these days? You and I have talked offline that there really needs to be a bond between you and the person that you are talking with, right? You and I have talked offline about how we've had our unique experiences with people we didn't quite connect with, but we learned from and we were grateful for the experience. But you did have something you shared with me during the recording that didn't take that I wanted you to tell the audience about.
Okay.
About finding a good, the one about Psychology Today, but it wasn't a promotion.
Okay. Yeah. right. We're not getting paid for this.
I was like, I didn't know that.
I'm gonna share it.
Yeah, this is a non-sponsor podcast. Just
all right. Well, like the most pragmatic way to, I think, these days to find a therapist is actually through a website called Psychology Today Therapist Finder is the actual page on their website. Okay. And on that page, you can do a search by insurance company, whatever issues you are identifying that you want to work on, and location, zip code. So, you know, nice, neat, you know, concise, easy,
right.
Easy way to find, not easy, I won't use the word easy, but just, you know, organized way to find someone, I think, to work with. And they also have, like, some people have recorded videos of themselves, you know, or taking photos of their office. You can really get a, you know, a little sense of who you're going to be working with that way. And the profiles are really fascinating. Like, every therapist is so different. Like, we all have our own way of presenting ourselves, and so you get a sense of who you're, you know, going to be sitting in front of, you know, that way also by looking at their profile. Psychology Today Therapist Finder is the name of the site. I remember as a little person, you know, a younger 20-year-old looking for therapists. I mean, I found my therapist that I still have today, that I've been going to group therapy with, you know, all these decades, on a bulletin board in my school. So,
oh my gosh.
I know. Isn't that wild? So,
it's crazy.
Yeah. So he was, yeah, he just, like, he was looking for people, you know, young, just students that were interested in doing a group therapy, traditional, what's called a traditional psychotherapy group.
Okay.
And I was just starting to study psychology, and, you know, I read about this term, traditional group psychotherapy, and I thought, that looks really fun. That looks really fun. I get to meet some people, and I just had a thought about, like, oh, and I get to have, like, a dad, you know, finally. So I went with an open mind. But group psychotherapy, that's another option also for people to know about, I think. And on Psychology Today Therapist Finder, you can do a search by also type of therapy. You can do a search by group therapy or support group. I'm sorry, support group. I forget if it's, like, inpatient, like some sort of, like, more medical term that they use, and then therapist. So you can also do a search that way there. So if you are a student, go look for a bulletin board in your school for counseling. And another common way that people find therapists is by calling their insurance company, and the insurance company will provide a list. And then I mentioned to you before, there's this book called The Rainbow Directory.
Yes.
I don't know if it's online, like free online. I don't think I told you that before during our last meeting, but there is something called a Rainbow Directory that has from A to Z, like literally from A to Z, by county, what human health resources are out in your community. So you can find, like, low cost or free therapy there. You can find information about housing. You can find information about where you can go to, you know, Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, or, I mean, just, like, everything to do with surviving if you're in crisis, basically, is in that book. Yeah, it's a really cool book. I mean, you have to, it's the Bible of, like, human health, you know, resources.
Why is that not available in junior high?
I know. Isn't that wild? I remember when I first saw that book in the hospital, and I remember thinking, why is this not, like, out, you know, in the library, like, everywhere? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what a valuable resource to keep hidden. I mean, I know they're not purposely doing that. And I also want to go back to, I love the your candor and honesty and authenticity before when you said, yeah, and it was my way to find a, or to have a dad. Like, mm-hmm. I just think that's so important for people to hear. And you and I've talked about this, and we can get it. We'll get into this more our next episode or the next few is you're human. You know, therapists are humans that are trying to figure out life as well. And I think sometimes people have a tendency to do what we do or did when we were kids to our parents and think, you know, they're superheroes and they're whatever it is that we thought didn't have the wherewithal to be like they're a human like me, and they're just doing the best they can, and they have their own challenges and their own things that they're going through. And I don't know, it just burst that bubble, right?
I think that was definitely an unconscious draw towards therapy. Was I was trying to correct things that either wasn't, you know, just like my mom was trying to give me, you know, the things that I couldn't get from her. I was, you know, in my 20s trying to figure out, how do I feed myself? You know, how do I get the things I still need to become a human? And I think a surrogate dad was definitely on the agenda, you know, unconsciously.
Yeah.
And I feel like I chose well, and that continued to be my guideline for how I picked supervisors that I was going to be, that were going to mentor me. Like I was very upfront about that, actually. And I tell my clients this, how important it is to be honest with the people that are going to mentor you. Like, if you're looking for someone, if you understand about yourself that you didn't get the best, you know, parenting growing up, you need to be honest with that mentor and say, I'm looking for, you know, a mom or a dad still, you know, or to get some of that, those goodies, you know, to get some of that good stuff, because they will be more inclined to offer the specific things that a good, you know, mom or dad can give you too. And it's okay to want that.
Well, and what I love the most, well, I mean, I love everything that you just said, but what I really love is that, you know, we're touching upon really knowing yourself and being honest with yourself before you enter into getting the help you need. And I think it's important. And even if you're completely lost and you're that rubber band ball and you don't know, I mean, I've been there too, where I'm like, I don't, you know, but when you do know and you have that insight, it's important to be honest throughout the process and not be afraid to vocalize your needs.
Yeah, especially with a therapist. I think you need to be angry with your therapist. I think it's okay to be angry and to express that. It's okay to tell them if, you know, there was something that didn't click, you know, during the conversation with them. And if you're looking for something specific that you don't feel like you're getting, like, it's okay to articulate that to them too, so that they can know, because they're human. They're not going to know everything, you know, that a client possibly needs.
Yeah. Oh, of course not. Right. Yeah. They're not mind readers. You're not a mind reader, are you? I mean, you kind of really are sometimes. We've definitely shared a thought once or twice, which is very impressive. But yes, on the general, I would say we're not. Well, I'm, you know, therapists are not mind readers. I'm not a therapist, but yeah. People in general are not mind readers.
Right. Yeah. Not very good ones anyway.
No.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. And then sometimes we project, and then, you know, or sometimes we're like off in this land, and yeah. No, I think that's all wonderful, wonderful information. Anything else you want to add?
Where else can you find a therapist? Let me think.
I mean, we talked about, you know, connecting with your friends and asking them, or colleagues or people you're surrounded with, because, and you talked about, you know, how it's helpful to open up if you feel comfortable.
Yes. It is really, it's helpful to share your interest in doing therapy with friends that you, people that you trust, because what will inevitably happen is they will tell you, I love working with this person, or I did this therapy with that person, or I know someone, in Torrance, or like everyone has had some intersection with therapy in their life, most likely that you meet. So I think it just like not just doing the hard work of sharing your story and what you're looking for and what you need, I think gives other people an opportunity to be vulnerable too, and gives them permission to be, so they will share what they know about therapy if you're looking for a therapist also, or how
Love
they
that.
found their person. Yeah.
Okay,
But
I'm gonna go to the next one.
okay.
Okay, so I added a couple things that I was thinking
Okay.
about, and I'm trying to decide. I think I'm gonna go to this one. Okay,
Okay.
so a lot of the reasons I went to therapy, and I think this would be helpful for people who maybe can't afford it or in between or just not ready yet, is, and one of the things that I think really got me was I didn't have lessons, or not lessons, I had plenty of lessons that I failed. I didn't have the tools on how to deal with difficult people or difficult situations. So, for example, I didn't even feel comfortable getting out of a conversation that was uncomfortable half the time. And then, so in therapy, I would come in and I would come in with a list of questions. And one time I would say, how do I get out of talking to someone when I'm uncomfortable or I just don't want to be involved in the conversation anymore? And, they provided me with, you can excuse yourself, go, kindly go to the bathroom and things like that. And obviously, there's the one that's more, the justification for behaving in your own best interest is that it's not selfish. And now we've
No,
come
not at
to
all.
be more vocal these days about how, it's incumbent upon you to take care of you. So if you're not jiving in a certain situation, it's okay to give yourself that permission to exit stage left, right?
Totally.
So, how do you deal with people who invade your space?
Oh, like psychologically, you mean? Like
I wasn't, but yeah, I
if
like that one too. I mean,
they're
I guess I put another note, like people who don't respect your boundaries.
okay.
So yeah, if you're,
Yeah. We're talking about the
I
same
don't know,
thing
like I had,
psychologically.
yeah, I think, yeah, so okay.
So boundary work is important for a person to feel safe, and it is necessary to a healthy relationship. And a lot of us are not taught the concept of boundary, and self-care. So in those specific terms, we learn it sort of indirectly, but I think when we become adults, the things that we're taught as little people, a lot of that doesn't transfer over as well. Like we need new tools, new rules, new boundaries. So the process of having good boundaries, the way that good boundaries are developed, is starts with a awareness of the self, that you have boundaries, you're allowed to have boundaries. I have boundaries, I'm allowed to have boundaries, and I can express my boundaries to someone, and that's okay. And that's what I need to do to stay safe in a relationship. I mean, not like safe in the sense that you feel emotionally regulated, not that you need to like defend against someone who's like harming you, physically or emotionally, psychologically, but just in a healthy relationship, it is normal to have boundaries, and it's necessary to stay emotionally regulated, and to also have a healthy relationship with another, with the self and another person. So Yeah, it starts with the awareness and acknowledgement that we have boundaries, and the way that we know that our boundaries are being crossed is through intuition. You'll have that inner voice that's telling you that you feel uncomfortable about something being said or being requested of you, and so. There's part of what supports that awareness of that boundary being crossed is acts of self-care throughout the day. Staying rested, making sure you're getting good sleep, making sure that you're resting throughout the day, making sure that you're checking in with yourself. How am I feeling right now? I mean, it doesn't have to happen, there's not a particular number of times that you need to check in with yourself, but I know for me, it's like once I'm proactive about doing it at least one time a day. And usually it's at night, actually. It's before I go to bed where I'll check in with myself and say, how am I feeling right now as I'm laying here? And then I'll do like the mental, like run the movie through my mind of how my day looked or what happened during my day. Those are like my check-ins, my regular check-ins that I do. In the effort to do those check-ins, you have more practice at like understanding when you're uncomfortable or there's something that you want or you have a goal in mind. And so when you're interacting with another person, you're more inclined, it's a more automatic act to recognize when someone is being extra negative, or saying something that feels inappropriate to you, or a request that you can't meet. It's not, for whatever reason, like it's a you don't have time, you don't think it's like an appropriate request. I mean, there's so many reasons why, like you would need to have a boundary for that. But but so when I'm in a situation where I'm feeling uncomfortable with someone, my first step is to check in with myself. Okay, that's making me feel uncomfortable. And then I'm actively listening. I'm looking for the request that this person is asking of me. And sometimes I will, say no right away to the request, or I will say, can I think about it, or I'll get back to you tomorrow. And I'll sit, I'll explore further, like what it means to me, that I'm feeling uncomfortable. Yeah. So boundaries is a big one. Boundaries are super important.
There was a time when I didn't have them and I didn't know anything about them. And now that I have them, I think it's everything you said. It's the practicing of it, the practicing of the self-awareness. Because if you're not aware how you're feeling, and then someone asks something of you and you agree to it, and then later you're angry with yourself, that's a whole different cycle of, it's actually a whole different conversation. But, for me, it was also, I had to come to the place of accepting that. I guess part of me was like, oh, does that make me a bad person if I don't want to do this? Or does that make me this? Because I'd been so beaten down or had hung out with the wrong kinds of individuals that didn't appreciate me for me. And somewhere along the way, I stopped doing that as well. So, when you're not giving yourself that same love that you deserve or the necessary love that you deserve, it's hard to ask for your needs to be met, right? So that for me was even uncomfortable. Now it's comfortable for me to say, I don't, I, you know what, most of my girlfriends, it's, that, or most of my friends, if something comes up when we can't do something, it's fine. Like there's no issue. I mean, it's not even fine. It's good. It's, hey, I'm not feeling it. I want to relax. I'm going to have a glass of wine.
Right.
That's, you know, let's do something another time. Right.
Boundary. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're asserting their boundary that they need some personal time. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, respect that because I want to be able to have that when I feel like that.
Right. Right.
And
you
so
recognize
I
them taking care of themselves. Sorry to cut you
off. And I admire that and I respect that. And it's what I want. It's the way I want to be treated. So you know, if someone's asking something, you know, their boundaries are important. People's boundaries are important to, you know, to respect that. And I think it's an uncomfortable, it was an uncomfortable and still is sometimes an uncomfortable learning experience to get into the groove of something that you haven't been accustomed to doing as a habit. Totally. Right. Okay, we are almost at 50 minutes, so I, not that there's a time limit, but we have so much more to cover. So I wanted to ask this one question and to end it because I just think it'll be really interesting.
Okay.
What do you think the purpose of life is? I know, it couldn't be like easy.
whoa.
Or do you think, because sometimes you'll ask people like, I'll say, what do you think the purpose of life is? And they'll be like, what do you mean? You know, to be kind, to be happy, to be a good, you know, to be the best person you could be. Yeah, I was just wondering how you would interpret that question.
Well, I think it's a great question. I didn't mean to like make fun of the question.
Oh, no. I mean,
just
I think
my
you're
nervousness
laughing.
Making me laughing, but around answering.
Well, and also it's the fact that I never stay on the surface. I always get, I got to dive down
that's
deep
fine.
And grab that
sand. That's good. What is the purpose of life? Is that, was that the question again?
What do you think for you?
I think the purpose of my life is to live my truth. You know, to live my truth and to have work that is meaningful, to love, and be loved. And to play. I mean, those are the big my top four in my life. Like to have a life that has purpose and meaning, I think.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean I'm stealing that from Erik Erikson, a very, very well-known developmental psychologist. He coined the phrase of, you know, a healthy person is someone who can love, work, and play, you know, and someone who's not doing well.
I like that.
Yeah. Someone who's not well, there's interference in those areas of their life in some way that is not allowing them to do those things. So, but I think that pretty much like it really encapsulates like what I think I'm here for is to be of service, you know, to help people, to love people, to be loved, to be able to enjoy and have joy through play, and to, yeah, to live in my truth, you know, and to assert my truth. Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful. I love
that's
it.
That's a really good question to ask all of your people that you're interviewing. That'd be so cool.
Well, I actually thought of that last night and I was like, I'm going to ask this to everybody because I want to know.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I came out of the womb looking for the manual to life. So if everyone tells me what they think their purpose is, I'm going to have like everything figured out. No, I won't. But yeah, no,
map.
It's a map, right? I know. Can someone please give me the blueprints to my own plans? I lost them. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been lovely.
Thank you for asking me to be here. I appreciate you. Yeah. I really, really have fun doing this with you.
I do too. This is just a
Yeah.
pleasure. I'm just, yeah, this is probably one of the best parts of the day. So thank you.
All
And
good.
I just want to let the audience know that there will be other podcasts that Heidi will be on. This is going to be a continuing series. We'll be covering different subjects. And we thank you for listening. And we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, evening, whatever time of day it is. Just love yourself. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Thank you.
Bye.